translation.
The aggregate elements, namely the five gross elements, the five subtle elements, the four internal senses, the five senses for gathering knowledge, and the five outward organs of action are known as the pradhan. Purport. According to Bhagavad Gita, the sum total of the 24 elements described herein is called the Yoniya Mahabrahma. The sum total of the living entities is impregnated into this Yoniya Mahabrahma. And they are born in different forms, beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant. In the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures, the sum total of the 24 elements, Pradhan, is also described as Yoniya Mahabrahma. It is the source of birth and subsistence of all living entities. This is Lord Kapila Dev's Sankhya Darshan, teachings on Sankhya. Sankhya means numbers or counting. So here we have numbers. Panch, panch, chatur vingsha, chatur dasha. The numbers means to classify the material energy into various categories. And sometimes different lists are given also. Sometimes we see there's 24 elements are given, sometimes 25, sometimes 26. It depends. Something could go in one category or another, just like modern scientists, there's some organisms, they're not sure whether it should be classified as plants or as animals, because they may have many characteristics of both. Anyway, it's an attempt to classify everything. Of course, this is Kapila Dev, it's not an attempt, it's definitive. Various philosophers have attempted in various ways to classify the condition of the material energy, or of that which we perceive all around us. And they come to various conclusions about how this world is existing, why it is existing, what is our relationship to this world, and how it will continue. So Lord Kapila Dev is giving definitive knowledge. And of course, the most important thing to know about the material world is that we don't belong here anyway. What is the difference between? In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna establishes that there are eight basic elements. Bhumir apanalo vayu kangmano buddhire vichara ahankara iti yangme bhina prakriti rashtada, which is Krishna's bhina prakriti. So eight elements, they are eight categories within one. 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, like this. And then, apareya metastvanyang prakriting vidhi me param. But there's another substance, or another shakti, another prakriti, another nature, which is different to the material energy. That is the spiritual energy. Jiva bhuta, made up of the jivas. Jiva bhutang mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat. The jivas form the sustenance for this material world. The material world, there's no need for the elements to exist. There's no need for the material world to exist, but it exists because of the jivas, of their desire to enjoy it. Otherwise, there's no need for it. There's no need for a prison, but because there are persons who, please don't put your beads on your feet. I have to train from beginning. It's good to be trained to chant, but they should be trained also not to put, and also not to chant during class. You have to listen during class. There's no need for a prison, but there becomes an artificial need, because there are persons who don't live according to the rules of the state. So there's no need for these separated material elements. But there is a need. It's created by the jivas who do not want to surrender to Krishna. So, jiva bhuta mahabaho, the yaya idam, they are here within this world. And that's the point, to see what is the relationship. This is all sambandha gyan. What is the relationship between everything that we see all around us? What are the interrelationships? Who are we? How do we relate to all this? So the crucial teaching which Lord Krishna gives at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, and which the whole Bhagavad Gita is based on this, is that there is a difference between the jiva, the soul, the spiritual living being, and matter. And failure to recognize that makes one a fool, even if one is panditamani. Even if one thinks that oneself is a great pandit. Ashochan anvasochas twang pragyavadams chabhashase. Gatasun agatasun nanu shochanti panditaha. Krishna told Arjuna, you're speaking as if you're very learned, but an actually learned person does not lament for the body, knowing that avinashi, it is avinashi, is not destroyable. So how? Why should you lament for something that's not been destroyed? It's absurd. If I say that, well, I'm so sorry that Banu Dev got blasted away in the bomb blast. You say, well, he's sitting here. But I'm so sorry that it's terrible. But he's still here. It's foolishness to say he got killed when he didn't get killed. Sorry. But you just happen to be sitting in front of me, so I'm using you as an example. So it would be ridiculous. So in the same way, if we lament, we need a bomb blast to wake him up now. If we lament, first we say, oh, this has been destroyed, but it's not destroyed, then it's foolishness. So in the same way, Krishna is pointing out to Arjuna at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. First of all, chastising Arjuna, that you're lamenting for that which is not destroyed and which is not destroyable. So ignorance is ignorance of our position, ignorance of what is our relationship with this world. The ignorance of not knowing that there is a jiva, para prakriti, that is beyond this material world, is beyond this material nature. And ignorance is the cause of our bondage in this material world, and knowledge of this is the cause of liberation. Therefore, throughout Bhagavad Gita, and here again in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's so much reiteration and analysis of how this material energy is running on. Yayedam dhayate jagat. How is it running on? What are the mechanics of that? What are the details of that? So much information is given. Because without understanding that, even if we hear of the spiritual world and the spiritual nature, without understanding that it is a different energy, it is different in quality. The spiritual nature is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, whereas the material nature, asat, achit, nirananda, everything here is temporary, everything here is pervaded by ignorance, and everything here is miserable. So if we hear about the spiritual world, but we're not educated to know the difference between the spiritual and the material nature, then even hearing of the spiritual world, we will consider it to be material. And in this way, spiritual is considered to be material, and material is considered to be spiritual. It comes to Mayavad, or considering it all one and the same. So this knowledge, as Prabhupada has stated several times, this knowledge of Sankhya Darshan, that is essential for spiritual understanding. Sankhya Darshan, the Sankhya Darshan of Ishvara Kapiladev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Kapiladev. There is another Sankhya Darshan of the Kapila who is known as Nirishvara, means the atheist, Kapiladev, who his analysis of the material world is more or less the same as that of Bhagavan Kapiladev, but his conclusion is quite different. His conclusion is asatyam apratishtamte jagad ahur anishvara aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. His analysis is that there's no ultimate truth, there's no ultimate underlying principle, there's no actual substance to the material world, it just is. There's no God in control, it's just existing. And everything is, there's no real connection between everything, which is absurd, but that's what they say. So this sambandha gyan, knowledge of our relationship with Krishna, also means to know what is the relationship of everything to everything. What is the relationship of jiva to prakriti? It's a tenuous relationship or an artificial relationship, isn't it? It's not a substantial relationship. But we're taking it as a substantial, and therefore we are substantially suffering. But actually not even substantially. It's also, it's an imaginary suffering, like the suffering in a dream. So, ahankare matto haya nitai pada pasharya asattare satta karima. Because we take that which is unreal to be real, therefore we suffer in this material world. Forgetting nitai, nityananda. Nityananda is also a name for Krishna, who's always blissful. So, this knowledge, if it's misinterpreted, that there's no actual relationship between anything, that means nothing has any real meaning. That's the conclusion of the atheist. There's no God in control, therefore there's no real meaning to life, that kimanyat kama haituka. What else is the purpose of life but for us to enjoy this world? And that's what all the philosophies of the world come to. All philosophies except Bhagavad philosophy come to the conclusion, either stated explicitly or it's implied, that everything is meant for our enjoyment. And even the so-called theistic philosophies of the world that do not have clear knowledge of who is Bhagavan and what is our relationship with him, then they take Bhagavan to be some kind of material enjoyer who assists us in our material enjoyment. And going to the spiritual world or going to heaven means that we all enjoy ourselves in the spiritual world, in heaven. And God, his job is to provide facilities, because he's our Father. And the Father, we don't have any other concept, but he's someone who provides facilities for our enjoyment. So this self-centered view, I am the enjoyer, and yes, I believe in God, and God is very good because he provides me all sense enjoyment. And if he doesn't, then I'll stop believing in him just to punish him. I'll become an atheist. I'll show you, God, you don't give me what I want. I'll stop believing in you, and then you will cease to exist. So practically they arrogate to themselves the position of God. That God's existence is dependent on our belief in him or not. Just like people ask, do you believe in God? As if God's existence depends on our believing or not believing. We will take a vote. And if 51% of the people say that we don't believe in God, then God is dead. And then maybe later on, if 51% say he does exist, then he's resurrected. These strange ideas they have. One major religious system of the world has the idea that God died for 3 days. And then he came back to life again. Very strange ideas. how God died, and then how the world was running off. And if God died, then that means that death is greater than God. So they have no actual knowledge of God. Therefore, even this word God, Prabhupada didn't like to use that. He used to say Godhead, which means, and then the supreme personality of Godhead. Godhead means, this term is used here in this verse, Brahma, the supreme absolute reality, the truth. He is defined in Bhagavatam. Jamadya sayaton vyaditaratas chache swabhignya swarat tene brahma hridaya adikavye muhyanti yat suryaha tejo vari mridang yatha vinameo yatra trisago misha dhamna swena sadani rasta kuhakam satyang parang dhimahi. Now this one verse clarifies the position of the supreme reality in a way that you won't find. You bring all the religions of the world and all their speculations put together. They don't even the first few words, Janmadi Asya Yataha, four words. That in itself is more knowledge than all the so-called religious books of the world. And even of that, of the rest of the Vedas for that matter. It summarizes the Vedic statement. Yatova imani bhutani jayanti yena jatani jivanti yat prayat yabhisang vishanti tad vijigyasva tad brahmeti. Summarizes the Vedic statement that the absolute truth, Brahma, is that from which everything emanates, that in which everything exists, that by which everything is destroyed. That is the proper subject of inquiry. Atato brahma jignyasa. This janmadya sayataha is the reply to, now we should inquire into Brahman, the absolute truth. So the answer is given, janmadya sayataha. That is the proper subject of inquiry. That is Brahma. So that is Brahma. That is an initial understanding of Brahma. God in relationship to this material world. This is practically the whole Vedic literature up to the, and until we come to the point of Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, it's all working on the principle of Chandra Shaka Nyaya, or indicating a distant object by first of all indicating something which is nearer and understood. The mother in the courtyard. Of course, this example doesn't fit very well in the modern age where people don't have courtyards. They live in apartment buildings and they have neon lights, so even the moon is there in the sky, you can't see it very well because of all the neon lights. But anyway, this example is there that in the courtyard, everyone used to have a courtyard in the days when people were less advanced and backward. People used to have space to live in, and a nice courtyard. So in the courtyard there are trees, so between the branches of the tree, the mother points out to her child, you see this is the branch, and in between the branch there's that big light, round, that's the moon. So by pointing out something that's familiar, and then again pointing to something which is more distant, less easy to see. Similarly, Arundhati Nyai, to point at, where is the star Arundhati? Arundhati is the wife of Vashishta. So Vashishta is a big star. She's always with her husband. Not like nowadays. Anyway, so point out Vashishta. You see that shining star, bright one? You see that little one next to it? That's Arundhati. So show something easy to see, then something less easy to see. The thing that you want to indicate, first you all you indicate, that which is more difficult to perceive, point out that which is easy to perceive, and then go on from there. So in the same way, the whole subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is Vrajaraj Krishna. Krishna in Vrindavan. And actually Krishna means Krishna in Vrindavan, especially for the Gauriya Vaishnavas, although we also quote Bhagavad Gita, Krishna in Kurukshetra, who's not different from Krishna in Vrindavan. But who are we to see that? If we see Vrindavan with our present vision, then we'll see. If we go to Vrindavan nowadays, we'll see pigs in the roads and smelly drains and greedy shopkeepers. And nowadays there are traffic jams. There was no traffic. There were no real proper roads when we first went. What to speak of traffic? So that's what we see. But seeing Vrindavan means Bishoy Charya Kobe Shuddha Habe Mantabe Amaharabo Sri Vrindavan. When we become free from the desire for sense gratification, our mind becomes purified, then we can see Vrindavan. But what are we seeing now? We're seeing Panchabi, Panchabhir, Brahma. We're seeing this material energy. So it's very difficult for us to even conceive of the spiritual energy. And if we hear of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, then we'll tend to put mundane, we'll tend to impose our mundane conceptions on it, just like the some historian of Gauriya Vaishnavism saying that Nityananda Prabhu preached to the Suvarna Vaniks community, the gold merchant community, because he needed money for spreading his mission. So he preached to them. As if that was Nityananda Prabhu, who is the master of all money and of everything else, as if he was needing to beg some money. So in the same way, people, they put their materialistic concepts, even if they hear about Bhagavan. This is the Padmaniti. When Padma, the wife of Kamsa, after Kamsa was killed, she was living with Ugrasena. So Krishna was living with them in Dwaraka, and she was thinking, oh, these Vrajavasis, how they mistreated Krishna. They're sending him out to look after cows and didn't even give him any shoes to wear. And then still they're asking him to come back. So she was thinking that you should make a calculation of the work Krishna did against all the butter he stole and all this. And if you make a calculation, you'll see that the amount he took is the more than the labor he gave. So if you show this, that it's not a very good economical proposition that they take back Krishna, then they'll give up the desire to take him back. They only want to take him back so they need someone to look after their cows. So this is the materialistic calculation. She cannot imagine how, because her heart is devoid of love of Krishna, she cannot imagine how the Vrajvasis, they want to bring Krishna because they love him. She can only think in terms of calculation. What is good for my self-interest? So she thinks that everyone else thinks like that. So with this calculating tendency, if we try to understand Krishna, then that attempt to understand Krishna will be maya. Mapiyate anaya iti maya. Maya means to try to measure. We even try to measure Krishna, who is by definition immeasurable. Duryodhana thought, now we shall capture Krishna. It's a great opportunity. This fool Krishna, he was thinking, is coming without any army as our messenger, so we shall capture him. And then the Pandavas, they'll lose all spirit because the Krishna is more dear to them than their lives. So if we capture Krishna, then the Pandavas will just, out of disappointment, they'll just flop. And then we won't have to fight. Very easily we shall, even without fighting, we shall retain the kingdom. So then they came to capture Krishna, and Krishna manifested himself in thousands of forms. So which one you want to capture? You capture one and I'm still in so many forms. You cannot capture. You can't capture one form But he can manifest in thousands of forms. So you cannot capture Krishna. Duryodhana's attempt to capture Krishna failed. Mother Yashoda, she was no Kshatriya, but she captured Krishna by pranaya rasa, by the ropes of love. So this is all glorified. So many prayers are there glorifying the devotees, how they capture Krishna, who the yogis they cannot even conceive of, who the karmis they're a long way away from, who the great warriors they're all defeated by him. Jarasandha bringing big, huge armies to attack Mathura, and Krishna, blowing his conch, comes out one chariot and finishes them all off. And then again he comes, and Krishna again finishes them all off. And then again. So Krishna is so great. Within his belly are all the universes, and that belly is tied up by Mother Yashoda, cowherd woman. So there's understanding the Krishna's position in relationship to the material world. And one thing is to realize how great he is. And even when one is developing love for Krishna, if one can understand how great he is, then we will understand how great is bhakti to him. Because bhakti, Krishna is more interested in the bhakti, in the love of his devotees, than in being the greatest. He's not much interested in, I'm so great. I'm great. But he's more interested in the love of his devotees. Just like Lord Brahma was praying to Krishna, you are the supreme, you are the source of everything. After he had stolen his cows and cowherd boys, he was praying in apology to Krishna. Krishna's thinking, I wish you'd hurry up and finish these prayers. I want to go back to playing with my friends. They're all waiting for me. So, this is great. Then again, when every day Krishna is coming home with all his cowherd boys and all the demigods come and they're praying, oh Krishna, you are so great. And the cowherd boys are imitating. They're going up to Krishna and imitating Lord Brahma and imitating Indra. They think it's a joke. All these funny people, funny guy with four heads and someone else with all these eyes. And they're coming up, oh, Krishna. And in the meantime, they're all jumping on his back and playing with him. So this appreciation of Krishna's intimate pastimes is enhanced by understanding his... Understanding means not possible to understand, but at least having some insight into his greatness. And we see it as great because we judge like that. We think someone who's very powerful is very great. So many people are coming here to this temple, but if the prime minister comes, then he gives, oh, he's a very powerful person, or big business magnate, as they're called in India, or magnate in the English-speaking world. So if a big businessman comes, then, oh, some special respect, he's a very powerful person. But even Lord Brahma, who is much bigger than any powerful person in Bombay, who is a powerful person? This Reliance, these Ambanis, they're based here? Is it? They're in... Is it? Or they're in Jamnagar, or where are they? They're everywhere. They're all pervading, all over India. Or... Hindujas are here sometimes. They're mostly in London. Bal Thackeray is very powerful here. Is he in power now, or Pawar's in power? Anyway, these are all powerful people. And we're not going to say anything against them. But they're nothing compared to Lord Brahma. Their power is just a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit of power compared to that of Lord Brahma. But even Lord Brahma, his power is very, 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 very tiny compared to Krishna's. So this is the point. all this description. Sometimes you might think it's very boring to hear about all this pradhan and aggregate of elements and all this. If someone was a scientist, maybe if they specialized in this line, maybe they could give us a more intricate description of this. What does all this mean? I must admit, I don't know all these details, how it all fits together. It requires a technical brain to understand all these kind of things. But the point to be understood from it all is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's five of this and five of that and 10 of that and 4 of this and 24 of that. And it's, what is it, 10, 5 plus 5 plus 4 plus 10 plus 24 equals, who can say, 1, Krishna. That's the answer. That's the you can go for your mathematics examination. And you can put at the end of every calculation, what is the answer? 1. Now, why are you putting the answer 1? Because everything is Krishna. He is Advitiya. There's no 2. In Vedic mathematics, there's only 1, Krishna. And there's also 0, which means forgetfulness of Krishna. This is transcendental mathematics. And Krishna is 1, and He's many. Eko, Bahu, Syam, whatever we see, many, it all comes from the 1, who is Krishna. So, this is class in Vedic mathematics, which I give you today. Everything is 1. But there is variety also, and the variety makes it fun. Not just 1. That's the Mayava, or impersonalists. Advaitavadi. We're Advaitavadis, actually. Vaishnavas are Advaitavadis. The so-called Advaitavadis, their concept of Advaita is imperfect. But the Vaishnavas know that Advaita, there's only Krishna. There's nothing else but Krishna. But that is also Vishishtadvaita. He has his Vaishishta. He has his speciality. He has his opulence also. They're included within the One. It's not separate from the One. Not exclusive oneness. Which is, their philosophy is foolishness from the beginning. Because even to speak of Advaita means that you are speaking and there's something else. If you say there's only oneness without any variegatedness, then there's no one to conceive of that. And so they say that actually the Advaitavadi is ultimately Shunyavadi. Because although he says that it's one, but every oneness, what every vastu, every phenomenon requires qualities to define it. Without qualities, it cannot be defined. So actually, there's shunyavadi. If they say there's no qualities, then it comes to shunya, which is nothing. But again, if there's someone describing the shunya, that means that there is something separate from the shunya. So their philosophy is useless from the very beginning. Whereas Vaishnava philosophy means to see everything, all the variety, and understand everything is resting in Krishna. And still he's aloof from it. How great is Krishna? Hare Krishna. Any questions, please? Are you very strict with this 8:45? In London it's 8:30, Soho Street. And if you go 1 minute over, whoo, heavy chastisement. Anyone has any questions? Our scientists or scientist is going to give us some clarification. What is the meaning of Mahatattva? Oh, I was hoping someone wouldn't ask that question. No, it has different meanings. Ultimate meaning of Mahatattva is Krishna. Huh? Virat? Kya bolte? Virat Buddhi. Where does this come? Not in English. Next verse. Well, ask it tomorrow. Now that's reasonable, isn't it? Mahatattva ultimately means Krishna. Tattva means phenomena, and Mahat means great. So ultimately that means Krishna. Mahatattva is differently defined in, even within the Bhagavatam itself, in different places. So that's why I say it requires someone to analyze it very carefully, because sometimes Mahatattva is equated with Pradhan and sometimes differently. But ultimately Mahatattva means, ultimate meaning is Krishna. And Virat Buddhi, well, there you go. Mahatattva means Krishna. And then Virat Buddhi means Krishna also. Ultimately. But that comes in the purport of the next verse tomorrow. No, but in the next verse there's no purport. That must be in the Hindi purport. Huh? With the Hindi purport you have to be careful sometimes, because sometimes the translator doesn't translate properly. That's also something you have to be careful of. Now it's being edited. Otherwise in the Hindi Bhagavatam generally it says that when Prabhupada writes, the Supreme Lord is the supreme living entity. So he writes Param Jeev, which is not incorrect, but the general meaning of Jiva shouldn't be used for Vishnu. So it gives a kind of impersonal flavor. Where is it? There's a whole page. How am I supposed to find it? Oh, it's right in the verse. Mahatattvam Hiranmayam. Hiranmayam. Isabel, Hiranmaya, my Virat Buddhi. Well, that's described, isn't it, in the whole Srishti ke pahele Sukshma Rup mein Usab Tattvam, Bhumirapa Nalovayu, Aprakat Rupme, Ek Mahan Suna Anda Jaise, Avo Hiranmai Bhakti. O Hiranmai bhi Bhagavan Arthat Srishti Karta Brahmaji ka Ek Naam hai. O Bhagavan Vishnu ka Ek Naam bhi hai. So, is prasang mein kya arth hai to? Dekhna parega mujhe. I don't know the whole Bhagavatam off by heart, by any means. Sorry. But this subject, this Mahatattva 24, someone, maybe, I think Suhotra Maharaj was going to write some book on this. It requires someone to study. It's like science, like studying physics, astronomy, all the, it's very detailed. So, you've studied? Please, here's the mic.
It appears that the word Sankhya is the original meaning of what we know nowadays, because of quantum physics.
Is it?
Because quantum in Latin means to count, and Sankhya means to count.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Yeah,
well, Prabhupada says Sankhya means like science, yeah. The thing is, how are they counting? Quantum physics, I don't know, I couldn't say. It's beyond my...
Literally, it means to say in the translator that Sankhya means count.
Quantum, like quantity, comes from the same Latin or Greek root.
Latin.
Is it, yeah.
So
but whether what they're saying fits with the Bhagavatam, that we have to see. And as far as I understand in quantum physics, more than in other areas of science, it's a case of joto mot toto pot. As many opinions, that many paths. In fact, each scientist may have several theories. So it doesn't seem to have any fixed understanding, as far as I know. But I'm not a scientist, so I can't say. If it fits the Bhagavatam description, all well and good. And I believe Rasaraj Prabhu is attempting to do that. But as I say, it's beyond my area of understanding or ability to understand. Of course, Krishna can give the ability, but so far he didn't in this lifetime. Yeah. Kind of Vedic, you can say. You can say pop Vedic.
Personally, I've taken some quotes out of the chapter called Quantum Healing, which actually collaborates with our Vedic version, so it kind of bridges the gap between where they are coming
from. Yeah, but if it ends up with Deepak, if one ends up with Deepak Chopra, then probably better go back to church or something. I mean, the man's a cheater, it's quite obvious. He's another case of, what is that? Pragyavadang Chabhashase. It's another case of someone speaking as if he knows a lot, but he actually doesn't. Because he doesn't recognize Krishna as the Supreme. He's a popularist. He's not concerned with the absolute truth. He's a pop Mayavadi. So they may say some things of value, but the overall equation is not Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. It's more like Deepak Chopra making him famous. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, who didn't promote himself, who promoted Krishna. That's one very good test of who's real, who's genuine. They don't promote themselves, they promote Krishna. That was the difference between Prabhupada and every other guru who went to America. Prabhupada promoted Krishna. So much so that even now Prabhupada's not even that well known in the Western world, or even in India. But people know, because of Prabhupada, people, at least they've heard of Krishna. So however nicely one speaks, or whatever one says in between, if ultimately it's meant for self-glorification instead of Krishna glorification, then it's sinful. It's not leading to enlightenment. It's using the tools which are... It may be using the tools which are meant for enlightenment to throw us into greater ignorance, which is what the Mayavadis do. They take the Vedic knowledge and they lead us as if we're going towards enlightenment, but it all ends up in ignorance. Because they're envious of Krishna. Okay. The town president's looking at his watch. That's the sign. So we say all glories to Deepak Chopra if he gives up his nonsense and surrenders to Krishna. And that's all. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.